Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
My voice.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, happy new year, 2 weeks into the year.
Wow.
Wow.
Congratulations on making it this far in your life.
Into 2021.
You know, a lot of people are still in a lot of difficult situations right now, and our heart goes out to them, but you've done it. You've made it to another revolution around the sun.
Good job. We've made it through that dimension that everyone's been talking about, that alternate dimension. But I feel like we didn't snap into a better one.
It's the same.
I feel like it's just slightly worse. There's a new strain of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff happening in America.
Yeah. You know, there's 50,000 new cases of COVID a day in the UK. We had two the other day and went into a 3-day lockdown.
Yeah.
It's like, oh no.
Our premier was like, nope.
Meanwhile, they're locked down.
What's happening here?
They're locked down.
Lockdown,
like,
bitch.
Yeah. Lockdown, bitch.
Actually, it's 3 cases now because the husband of the cleaner has the new strain of COVID.
Oh, okay.
Too.
I mean, it's the husband.
But they're already in isolation.
And so it's fine.
So it's fine.
Of course, he has the buddy.
Yeah,
thing.
No shit. But the first time he tested negative. But they retested him and he came up positive.
Oh, maybe
it's
a bunch of
people.
If
you're in close quarters to the person that has the strain, the 70% more infectious strain of COVID-19.
That's fucking heaps. Hey, that guy's ride or die. Yeah. Like, I mean, if you got COVID, I'd be like, fuck it, I got COVID. Like, you know.
I mean, same.
It's one and the same.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to isolate myself from you for 2 weeks. That sounds horrible. I can't be away from you for 2 weeks.
What if I was just in one of those glass rooms with, like, the glove hands so we can still hug?
Yeah. And, you know.
And I could have glove hands on the outside so I can still jack you off.
What the hell?
Oh, we're going into 2021 with some more crude humor.
I was going to go there, but then I'm like, yeah, I'll save it.
No.
But no, there's no saving it.
There's no saving it. That's what this year is all about. We saved ourselves too much last year. Let's not save ourselves anymore. Everyone waiting till marriage, stop. It's a cult. Stop.
Whoa.
That's too fresh. No, that's too far. I apologize.
You want to get married, so are you wanting to join the cult?
I'm saving myself.
The cult of marriage? Oh, what? Being abstinent is a cult.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know whether
it's just not human.
Follows the lines of
it's
a cult.
It's not human to stay abstinent. Just wait until you're of age, though, with someone who is also
of age. Don't be afraid to sow your seed, whatever that means.
Sow it everywhere. Who cares? Fuck it. Illegitimate children.
No, wait, I didn't mean that. I meant throw it in the garden, you know? Actually sow some seeds. Grow some plants.
Yeah. I think 2020 should have taught us all how to be more self-sustainable, but I think it just taught people how to panic more. And as someone with an anxiety disorder, I don't think that was really good.
Since our last episode, it's been your birthday.
It's been my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank
Woo!
I'm 24. You know what I mean?
I know. Ooh. You're approaching your mid-20s. That means you're halfway to 50, a quarter way to 100, and one-tenth of the way to 250 years old.
Oh, the day I turn 250 years old, I'm going to hold you accountable for this
okay,
moment.
Yeah. I've cursed you now with an immortal nature.
I'm going to live to be 250.
You know,
no.
They may be able to
I
do that.
I like living to 24. Like,
oh, fuck. Sorry.
You're right. I don't want to live to 250.
You know, if I could maintain this exact same body and everything that I have now and be healthy, I would not mind living for 1,000 years.
I mean, yeah.
Or longer.
Theoretically, if you got to, stay in the state that you are. Honestly, I'd like to be a bit more skinnier. So when I get to my skinnier self, then I can, you know, continue aging from there without aging.
Right. So
living
like
longer.
Like a vampire.
Yeah.
I hear that you just have to, like, drink the blood of virgins and then you pretty much sustain
right.
for the rest of
no, your life. No one have sex.
Yeah.
I need your virgin blood. So I can.
It's either that or you throw them into a volcano. I can't remember what the old rule of witchcraft is.
I just want to be a vampire and live forever. Only come out at night because I don't really like being in the sun that much. I get sunburned very easily.
You do.
I do. I've got.
You still got sunburn. I remember once when we were first seeing each other. You got very sunburned, and that sunburn lasts you like the tan line caused by that suntan, was on your body for like. 8 months.
Yeah.
Your poor, precious, fair skin.
I know. It's hard having Scottish and Irish in me.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm the definition of white. I'm kidding. There are whiter people out there than me. More Caucasian.
I mean, yeah. That 1% of Australian Indigenous person would...
That's saving me. Honestly, in yeah. this climate that we live in, that is saving me. I probably have melanoma, like, obviously. All Australians do.
I mean, it's the most common thing. In Queensland, where we live, I mean, especially where we are in Queensland, mm-hmm. it's just like, hey, every other person's getting melanoma every other day, considering, I mean, the giant hole in the ozone layer, because we're all farting so much.
Yeah, ugh. So like kangaroo meat that we eat, so high in iron and all that jazz.
Yeah.
I don't eat kangaroo meat.
There's
something about eating a kangaroo that doesn't feel right.
I told some of our friends the other day that we eat kangaroo, our national animal.
Yeah, I don't
think
that
they were very confused.
Yeah. I feel like we shouldn't be eating our...
I mean, Americans animal. Don't eat the bald eagle.
They don't.
English people don't eat lions. Like, why the fuck is it...
Why are we eating kangaroo?
Right? I mean, there's so many of them.
They are. So they're, like, ethically sourced.
I mean, ethically sourced, we say, but they go in a helicopter and mow them down with machine guns. I don't know if that's ethically sourced. And then just give the bodies to...
Like, they're not being...
Coals.
They're not being bred at extreme rates. For us to eat.
They are just breeding
at extreme rates in the wild, and they don't really have any other predators.
Except an Apache helicopter.
Yeah, pretty much.
Apache
Molly loves helicopter. Kangaroo.
Oh, she does. It's her favorite
kind
of
meat. It's
her
favorite. Whenever it's her birthday, she gets kangaroo.
She's a very special girl.
Yeah, she's very special. She's snoring right now.
Yeah, hopefully you can hear it. Bit of a tranquil backing track to our podcast. We've got very fun things planned for 2020. We're going to go into
a
bit more detail
yeah.
on our Facebook page probably sometime this week.
Well,
maybe Patreon for an interesting little teaser as well.
Yeah, last year was a little bit depressing.
It was
so
tough.
This year, we're going to make it
fun. Fun. Who would have guessed it?
The opposite of being depressed. Happy.
We've
fun,
already
energetic, lively.
Belinda's already sort of hinted at the idea that we might have an alien theme for one
no,
of the
no,
months.
I haven't hinted at the idea. It is happening.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, we have said that we're going to have an April alien theme. But
alien
we're thinking
April month. I don't know what that meant. April,
thinking
alien
of
month.
Some
alien month in April.
There we go. We're thinking of some other themes to put on the months.
Maybe it might make the news. Oh, what a little... I texted you last night.
Let me check it out.
That's a little Easter egg for you there.
Oh, right. I get it now.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see how slow my brain processes information. Do you want me to start today's episode?
I feel like yours is more brutal than mine.
Okay, you go ahead then. Or do you want to
start
crazy?
Start crazy and then end on a light note.
Oh, you still lighthearted?
kind of.
Okay, sure.
It's a poltergeist.
All right. Well, mine's a big curse.
All right. Big curses go before poltergeists.
All right. So. Tokyo, Japan. Undoubtedly one of my most favorite places on planet Earth, as many people know. Mm-hmm. Little did I know that when I stayed there, I was actually pretty close to a shrine that is said to contain the cursed head of a rebel samurai. Today, I'm going to be discussing the cursed head of Taira no Masakado. So, as per usual, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the paranormal occurrences surrounding the head, let's take a dive back in history to 10th century Heian period.
10th century?
Yeah.
The first double-digit century.
The late 800s and 900s.
Holy shit.
Yeah. That is when this samurai was in prominence, of course. So, Taira no Masakado was born into a noble family who were in direct descendants of Emperor Kanmu. Regardless of the fact he was born into a noble family, he had a strong dislike for authority for some reason and was like super headstrong and rebellious. His first true test in life came when his father passed away, because his uncles decided it'd be a great idea to send their armies to go and kill them so they could take all the father's wealth. Unbeknownst to the uncles, Masakado was an incredibly skilled warrior, and he defeated his uncle's armies. I assume with his own. It says in the story that he defeated them single-handedly, but there's no way in hell one guy is defeating, you know, 50 people in an army. Anyways. But he ended up sending them back from where they came from. They retreated back to their uncle's lands. And, yeah, this is the first recorded instance of Masakado's revenge. As he decided that it wasn't really, you know, enough to just defeat their armies. He needed to go and descend upon his family's lands and slaughter everyone. And so that's what he did. He slaughtered thousands and made the name for himself across the land in doing so. So, news of the slaughter reached Emperor Suzaku, and Masakado had to go to the court to defend his actions. And somehow, the act of killing thousands, you know, innocent men, women, children, the sort of serfs of the, I don't know what they'd be called in Japanese terms, but the sort of peasantry. Yeah, so he slaughtered thousands of them and killed his uncles. But it was somehow seen as like retaliation, you know, slaughtering them and then all their people. And he was granted a complete pardon, and there was nothing really that further came from it. And it would soon come to be known that betraying or attacking Masakado was definitely not a good idea, as 8 of his other relatives decided to try and seize his father's riches from him. And those 8 territories then fell under Masakado's rule as he slaughtered everyone.
Jesus Christ.
Yep. So Masakado had gained a name for himself in battle, becoming known as an immortal warrior who could not be killed. And to add to his fame, the peasants loved him. Where they'd usually be treated like absolute shit and just sort of like tossed to the curb, Masakado was like super kind and generous with them. And they began worshipping him as a demigod because they believed he was just so amazing. Yeah.
But I think that's the goal for 2021. Be so amazing you get worshipped as a demigod. Even if it means you got to slaughter a whole bunch of people.
If that's not a cult, I don't know what is.
I don't know what is. Cultism.
Tales would reach the emperor's ears that the great warrior Masakado was calling himself the new emperor of Japan and was planning on making a move on the nobility in Kyoto to kill the emperor and unite Japan under his banner. Well, obviously the emperor couldn't have that at all, so he amassed an enormous army that exceeded Masakado's 10-1, and the army marched on the rebel samurai, and Masakado was killed with a well-placed arrow to the head.
Jeez.
Horrible, right? Yeah.
Headshot.
I guess that you could say all that power really went to Masakado's head. In more ways than one, because the emperor had Masakado decapitated and had his head brought into Kyoto to serve as a reminder for what would happen if anyone betrayed the emperor and the imperial rule.
Even a demigod.
And his head didn't rot. For months, it sat on a pike, not rotting. It looked as if it hadn't aged a day from when it was removed from the body.
Were they in a cold climate?
I mean, Japan's pretty cold, but if it's months, the temperature changes enough to where it... The only thing they did notice, however, is Masakado's face slowly grew into a scowl, and his eyes opened, and he began berating people, scolding people, telling people to bring him back to his body so he can be reunited and go on a rampage and seek revenge for being killed.
Wait, his head was saying this to people?
Whilst on a pike.
Are you sure it's not just nerve spasms?
I mean, after months.
Me trying to really debunk this, it's very creepy.
So, the denial he faced infuriated him, and with a burst of vibrant light, Masakado's head rose from the pike it was perched upon and took off into the sky, screaming like a meteor.
God, like
a boo! Masakado's delight! I don't know. Anyways, yeah, it left this trail of dazzling color behind it as it flew off into the sky as a meteor. And he screamed the entire time while he was flying, of course.
He has no vocal cords.
It doesn't matter at this point. He's ahead. I think he defies logic. So the head flew very far, landing in a fishing village called Shibazaki. And the hill it landed upon is now called Masakado no Kubizaki. Or the Hill of Masakado's Head.
Locals, is it still there?
No, because it gets taken somewhere else. Oh, the hill is still there, yeah.
Oh, of course the hill would be with the head.
Although I researched Masakado no Kubizaki and I couldn't find the place, so maybe it's like a special like shrine or something.
Hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
So the locals found the head, cleaned it off, and built a shrine over the top of the fallen samurai just to try and please the head. And it was then that paranormal activities started happening.
Oh, then that's when the paranormal activity started. Not the talking head flying off like a meteor. That's not paranormal at all.
No. Not
that's
that
just all
sort of
CGI
shit.
And special effects.
Yeah, that classic 10th century special effects. So a ghostly samurai figure with a blank face would be seen walking through Shibazaki. The town would experience countless tremors, earthquakes, and radiant lights would wake the locals up at night, emanating from the spot where
Nothing
Masakado's
to do with
head
Japan
came from.
Being on a tectonic plate or anything.
No. So in order to please the fallen spirits, the locals went about crafting a fancier housing and shrine for the warrior, and this seemed to appease the spirit. All paranormal activity ceased entirely, but that was until a Buddhist temple was built nearby.
Oh, no.
In the 1300s,
oh, no.
Plagues and earthquakes befell the area.
Oh, no.
The locals immediately believing that Masakado's head was to blame for mm-hmm. this, obviously.
Yeah.
So in order to appease the spirit, the head was dug up and moved to a more prestigious shrine, hoping that making Masakado a deity would please him.
Jeez Louise.
So
did
in it? It did. It seemed to do the trick. In Japanese tradition and sort of religion, I might be butchering this, so I apologize to any of our Japanese listeners, if there are any. Deities or the ghosts, like ghosts can be deities of a shrine. Like, a deity in general terms usually is a god, like you'd think of like a, you know, Zeus or something like that. But in Japanese traditional religion, it's like, I think it's called Shinto religion. If a ghost or the body of like a samurai or something is particularly revered and they are like given offerings and stuff at their shrine that they're buried in, then they become the deity of that area, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah. So making him into like a deity by putting him in this big prestigious shrine, like gives him power over the area, I suppose.
Okay.
Yes. So in 1874, this is like 570 years later, the emperor of the time visited the shrine for the first time and found it outrageous that an enemy who tried to raise an army against the imperial family would be honored, and demanded that the head of Masakado be removed and put to a lesser shrine.
No, no, no. Look, my man, that's not going to work. Unless you want plagues, earthquakes, sky rocketing, meteorite heads. I don't think that's a great idea.
Well, it took, you know, it took nearly 50 years, but shit started happening. The great Kanto earthquake rocked the area. Many people attributing the head to a very angry, powerful outburst by Masakado, who'd saved up his energy to wreak havoc on the area.
Yeah.
One of the largest buildings close by to Masakado's new resting place was the Ministry of Finance, and that building was torn to the ground during this earthquake. A new Ministry of Finance building was slated to be built, and what better place to build the new Ministry of Finance than over the location of Masakado's head.
No, so, you don't do that.
Before construction, the shrine was excavated, but Masakado's head was nowhere to be found.
Oh, no.
But they built a new shrine anyway.
And oh, no.
They built their new ministry too.
But with no head.
No, they don't know where it is. So they probably missed it. It was probably somewhere else in there, and they just built new ministry over top of Masakado's head underneath the Ministry of Finance
in Japan.
So, wow. 14 people who worked there in the years following met their end in very mysterious circumstances, and countless more people in the building experienced horrible luck. There seemed to be this common thing that people would experience in the building where their feet and legs would receive injuries. It's like they'd have like sudden bruises and like bleeding on their legs and stuff like that. So where they walk upon the ground where Masakado's head is actually buried, he's like drawing, giving off energy or like latching up at them and like scratching them, et cetera, et cetera.
With what hands, though?
That's it's just it. Like, yeah, gnawing at their feet.
Headbutting their shins.
The ministry finally got the idea that they probably shouldn't have built the building there. So, they moved the building and restored the shrine to what it was. And then they began doing yearly purification rituals on the site to appease the spirit.
Do they still do it?
They upped their amount they do it because more shit happens.
Okay. All right.
After what is described to be near exactly 1,000 years after Masakado's death, his thirst for revenge still knew no bounds. A lightning bolt hit the Ministry of Finance's new building out of spite for building on top of his grave.
Oh my God.
And burned it down. Don't fuck with Masakado.
Don't fuck with this dude, eh?
Yeah. So in World War II, American troops were going to bulldoze the shrine to make space for vehicle parking, etc., and were warned against it by the locals. And when they went to actually go and do it, their bulldozer was mysteriously flipped onto its top and the driver was crushed to death. Don't fuck with Masakado.
Don't fuck with Masakado.
I think that's the clear lesson to be learned here. Countless additional illnesses and deaths have befallen those who disrespect Masakado while nearby his shrine. And finally, in 1984, Masakado was restored to deity status by Emperor Hirohito, which really pleased Masakado.
Good.
Since then, he's been pretty chill. Hasn't messed around with anyone who visits the shrine, but apparently there's like a super high price to pay for those who mention or portray Masakado in movies, television, and media without first properly paying respects. So here's hoping we don't end up getting messed up by a flying, screaming head.
If we are never heard from again, this episode is evident. This is proof.
That Masakado's head knows no bound. Yeah. He's very revenge orientated.
I would be too if someone fucking shot me in the head and then just decided, you know what I'm going to do? Like, cut your head off and just put you on display for a little while.
Right.
I'd fucking skyrocket off that too.
So the Shrine of Masakado is in Tokyo now, and I'm really, really bummed that I didn't actually get to go and see it, or didn't even know about the story when I was last in Japan.
Do you have to pay to go see it?
No, it's just a small little shrine you can walk up. It's like in a side street. It hasn't been built over, obviously. It's like amongst skyscrapers, probably. It's really nearby to a palace. There's like a palace in Tokyo. I think it's... I can't remember that.
Do you know what we need more here?
What?
Palaces.
I agree.
Why don't we have more palaces? Or like castles? Oh!
We don't have any royalty.
Let's make royalty. We're now royal, I declare it. We demand a castle immediately.
Done.
ASAP Rocky, thank you.
I mean, we could probably build a castle. I'm sure there's a castle in Australia.
Of course there's a castle in Australia. Just say we need more.
Yeah. All right, well, that's all
beach.
I.
Sand castles in the sand.
That's all I have for my story.
Okay. Very good story. I liked it.
Thanks.
Yeah, I know. Super great.
Pretty
super
fun.
Funny. Yeah.
Pretty silly, you reckon?
No, I liked it. I didn't think it was silly.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about a podcast. Well, first off, the reason why Brayden did a headless haunting is because I was going to do a haunted head as well. But then upon more research, as per usual, it was just an art piece.
Oh, no.
A very good art piece. And I still wanted to talk about, like, the story behind it, but then I was like, I don't know if it's a real story.
It was just something someone made up.
I don't know. I can't trust it. So I didn't.
Fair enough.
Actually, I don't think it was a real story because hermaphrodites can't self-impregnate.
Oh.
So, it was about a nun who...
What is it again? Autosexual?
No, so it was about a nun who fell pregnant and gave birth to a girl. And being a nun, she wasn't allowed around...
Other people
with penises.
Right.
She wasn't allowed to have sex, but apparently upon further investigation, her hymen was still intact. And then this was immaculate conception, and she gave birth to the second coming of Christ. But the second coming of Christ, apparently, was a female, so this child was like... They had told everyone that the child had died during childbirth.
Oh, okay.
And... that there wasn't a second coming of Christ because it was a female and was born female.
So it's Christine.
What?
Christine.
Yeah, instead of Christ, Jesus.
Oh, yeah, right. Jesus is the first name.
This was Jessica.
Jessica Jesus Christ.
Jessica. Anyway, so... No, I think the name that was like Maria or something. Maria Josephina or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then she died when she was 33, like Jesus Christ did. So they cut her head off and preserved it.
Ah, as you do.
But then it was like, oh, it was later discovered that the mother and that the daughter were both hermaphrodites and they self-impregnated. But you can't, that's not possible. It's not humanly possible. Maybe in some species of like
fish, frog things,
and fish and shit like that, but... not in humans. It's not possible to self-impregnate. So that's
right.
Why I was like, I don't think this is real.
This is a lie.
It's a very good story. I don't think it's real, and I don't want to be your idiot. So I'm going to do a poltergeist, because this is you, me, and a poltergeist. This is 2021. I'm going to start the year off fun.
Do it.
Fun, funky, and fresh. And babe... you've heard of fetishes, right?
Of course.
Yeah, some people just like their balls being stomped on. Some people just want their their girlfriend with little pink handcuffs on, you know? It's just, is what it is. Everyone has fetishes. Have you heard of a poltergeist having a fetish?
No, I haven't. I've heard of spectrophilia, but not this.
Spectrophilia, that's, I would say that's a special kind of fetish.
Mm.
Well, I don't know why, but articles decided to describe this poltergeist as having a toy fetish.
Oh, okay.
Not like adult toys.
Oh.
Like children's toys.
Okay. I was just imagining in my mind dildos and vibrators flying around everywhere.
I feel like that would be so much better. I don't think I'd be scared by that unless I'm bent over.
Don't scream. Ah!
And then there's just like ectoplasm everywhere.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it took it too far. Okay, so this is about the South Shields poltergeist, who has a fetish for toys. It was December 2005 when a couple, Mark and Marianne, which are pseudonyms because they wanted their identities to be completely hidden there because they were terrified of this thing. It's hilarious.
Didn't want them to track. Didn't want it to be able to track them down on the internet and
that's it.
Find where they're living.
Well, it could. Well, let me continue.
Okay.
So they were living with their 3-year-old son in South Shields, England, which is where the poltergeist gets its name from, obviously. Their home was near another famous poltergeist haunting, the Pontefract poltergeist, which I might do next week.
Nice.
I think I found my story for next week. Fun. As per every poltergeist encounter, it started with them hearing and seeing strange things in their home. So, furniture moved by itself, doors open and close seemingly on their own, and chairs would be found stacked in bizarre ways. But it wasn't long before this entity became violent.
Uh-oh.
As they all do, we know this.
Of course.
So, one night while Marianne and Mark were in bed together, Marianne got hit in the back of the head with one of her son's toys. So, Mark attested that it seemed to have appeared out of nowhere, considering he was in bed next to her and no one else was in the room. The room was unusually cold, even though they had the heating on for a few hours before getting into bed. One of the articles described them as, like, being stripped down. Like they were
naked.
They were getting ready to fuck. They're about to give their son a little brother or sister.
Oh god.
Hell yeah. Anyway, this gets better. So all of a sudden they were pummeled with toys being thrown at them out of complete thin air. When they tried to shield themselves with the blanket, they felt a force trying to pull it away from them like a game of tug of war.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah. It all ended when Mark felt searing pain on his back, only to reveal 13 red scratches down his skin.
Oh, wink.
I think he liked it. The scratches burnt intensely and felt as if the entity was dragging its claws down Mark's back. And then they vanished as quickly as they came.
Whoa.
So one minute they had the scratches, the next minute he didn't have the scratches.
That's tough to get photos of for evidence.
that is. It's very unfortunate. So that's when this poltergeist so-called toy fetish, I loved mentioning toy fetish in this, had fully manifested. Over the next few months, there were more instances of unexplainable events around their son's toys. So things were happening like a rocking horse decided to appear hanging from a ceiling fan. How would it get there?
What the hell?
You can't tell me a 3-year-old boy is doing that.
No, I can't tell you that.
I don't think a 3-year-old boy is capable of picking up a rocking horse and hanging it from a ceiling fan. How would it hang from a ceiling fan without the ceiling fan falling? How strong is that ceiling fan? How light is that rocking horse?
All good questions that I would like answered in the future.
Well, they might be answered in a book that was written about this. Actually, several books that have been written about this. And
good,
a movie.
Good segue.
You're welcome. I don't know the names. Just type in the South Shields Poltergeist and it all pops up. All
right.
And only a couple of articles. Pissed me off. Okay. So, in another instance, the couple found a stuffed rabbit sitting in a toy chair at the top of their stairs.
Oh.
And if it couldn't get any worse, Brayden, it just couldn't get any worse. Guess what the little rabbit had in its lap?
A knife.
A box cutter.
Oh, what the fuck? Holy shit, yeah, rabbit.
A box cutter. Where's a fucking 3-year-old finding a box cutter, right?
Very true. That's not a
toy. This is what I keep trying to think to myself. I was like, look, this could just be the little kid throwing toys and shit. But
the little kid is... How old is he? 3?
3.
I don't think he's smart enough to put together something that creepy.
That creepy, right? I mean, kids are creepy.
Yeah, but
I mean,
not intentionally so.
Not intentionally.
They haven't developed their creepy sense yet.
Yeah. They don't know what a creep is. Anyway.
Let's hope not.
Let's hope not. So it wasn't long before malicious messages began to appear on their son's drawing board, like, just go now, die, bitch, RIP, and go, bitch, now to your mom.
Wow, talking mad shit.
Talking mad schmack.
This poltergeist is...
And satanic-looking symbols would appear as well.
Damn.
So,
6669, baby.
6669. Go fuck you, bitch. I'm gonna fuck you, bitch. I'm gonna get some toys and fuck you, bitch.
What the fuck?
I don't know. No, leave it in. But, you know how you say, what are they gonna do? Trace them down on the internet or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
They received messages on their cellular devices.
Oh, no.
They did, from untraceable sources.
Jesus.
They couldn't trace it back to a telecompany or to, like, a phone number.
Really?
Nothing. Some messages read as, go die, and you're dead. The messages seemed to be directed more at Marianne than it did Mark.
Yeah.
As there was a few messages saying, I can get you when you awake, and I'll come for you in your sleep, bitch.
Very aggressive.
What else? Going to die today, going to get you.
Wow. How creepy.
That one is a bitch. Afterwards.
Yeah, what the hell?
Could you imagine a ghost just calling you a bitch 24/7?
That's aggressive.
Like, it's hard enough being written, go die or you're dead. But then to be like, bitch.
Yeah,
it's
what, like, the fuck?
What ghetto fucking poltergeist is this that has a fetish over toys and is calling people names? Like... There's no need. You're already scratching people up, getting box cutters out of drawers. Yeah. Like, what are you doing? Okay.
Jesus.
So, when I was outside the house, it would continuously call my mobile from our home phone, even though I knew for certain that no one was in the house, says Marianne. It sent me death threats by text. No matter what I did, I couldn't get away from it.
Wow.
Also, not to mention another instance of, like, a weird thing happening in the house. Their toilets would flush blood.
Oh, okay. Let's just...
Like, that's...
That's normal.
How are you not calling in for an exorcism on your home? As soon... You know, it is one thing to be receiving death threats via text message from a ghost, but as soon as there is blood coming out of any faucet, in any toilet bowl, down the walls, yeet the fuck out of there.
Yeet the fuck out of there.
Yeet the fuck out.
Bitch.
Bitch. I know this was 2005, but, like, you could have yeeted.
Get out of there.
Oh, why did I say that word so stupid? So Marianne said she was too terrified to sleep, but too frightened to stay awake. I felt that we just couldn't escape from it. No matter what we did, we couldn't get away. She says that a million times. Sometimes their young son, who they gave the pseudonym Robert.
Robbie.
No need for that. No need for that name. Robert.
What do you have against the name Robert?
I don't. I just thought, you know, they've got Marianne, Mark. Why go Robert?
Another
why,
M name.
Why not Matthew?
Mick.
Mick. Oh, no. Ugh. Yeah. Robert's fine. So sometimes he would go missing for long periods of time, only to be found hiding in strange parts of the house, like closets, under beds, and in cupboards. And honestly, to me, that just sounds like a three-year-old.
Yeah, that's true. Or he's playing hide-and-seek with the ghost.
Ghost.
Run and I'll find you, little boy.
You're gonna die in there.
Bitch.
Yeah, so they eventually called in paranormal investigators Mike Hollowell and Darren Ritson, who are the ones that wrote the book.
Nice.
I'm pretty sure. They were called in and claimed to witness several incidents. They documented objects balancing on their own in impossible angles, as well as the strange phrases sketched onto paper and toys. They claim to also have seen the entity manifest.
Wow.
So Darren admitted that at first he was very skeptical, but of course he was proven wrong by the entity itself. So the house was quickly kitted out with motion-activated video cameras and sophisticated sensors. If the poltergeist was to appear, the investigators were determined to capture on film, but they didn't have to wait very long. No, no, no. So one evening, Mike was working at the house and saw a dark shape appear on the landing outside of the couple's son's room. So outside the little boy's room. Marianne saw it too and screamed.
Fuck.
The entity walked slowly from the bathroom across the landing into the bedroom, says Mike. As it passed the door to Robert's room, it paused and stared icily at me, its face devoid of all features such as eyes, nose, or mouth.
Oh.
It was cold and menacing. It felt like it was burrowing into my soul.
Damn, so, son.
They described it as a midnight black three-dimensional silhouette that radiated sheer evil.
Oh.
And stood about 2 meters tall.
Fucking hell, giant.
It's fucking huge.
The big gangly shadow man.
Hell yeah, that is.
Creepy.
Throwing little stuffed puppy dogs
everywhere. Yeah, yeah.
But they were never able to capture it on camera. Mike was so stunned by what he saw that he didn't manage to switch the camera on in time. It was gutting, says Mike. We all saw it, but we didn't get the proof we needed. But my thing is, if they had motion sensor cameras, how do they not capture it?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
If they all saw it manifest in front of them, wouldn't the technology have been able to pick it up? Or was the technology just not as advanced in 2005?
Oh, it definitely wasn't, but I don't think it was that shitty where they wouldn't have been able to pick it up.
They would have been able
to get something,
right? I think so. Insane.
Still cool.
Still very cool. So a few days later, they were given a second chance when the poltergeist once again attacked Mark. Just as before, Mark felt the entity approach him and start drawing its talons down his back. You could actually watch the scratches forming, says Mike. First, an elongated red patch, then sharply defined scratches within it. Cuts started to appear on the right-hand side of his back. They immediately bled. Then Mark's skin started to change color. It went dark, almost as if it was sunburnt. I've seen film and stills of poltergeist scratches appearing before, but nothing like this. The investigators frantically checked over their video cameras, and this time they'd caught the attack on tape.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shape. Although the quality was poor, they could see the scratches appearing on Mark's back. And do you think I can find that footage?
No.
No.
It's nowhere to be found.
Nowhere to be found.
Maybe one of you can have a better chance of
probably,
finding it.
You know what? You guys probably type it in on YouTube and get it straight away. But look, that's just not how it worked for me.
Send it to us on Facebook.
Please.
You Mean a Poltergeist.
Or to the website, youmeanapoltergeist.com. Thank you. All right. What else? So the poltergeist was apparently witnessed by dozens of people. And its chilling antics were captured on film still.
Nice.
On one occasion, a group of six paranormal investigators witnessed an attack on Mark. They also saw levitating crockery, ornaments. Levitating crockery, ornaments moving of their own accord from room to room, and ghostly sounds emanating from the baby monitor.
Oh, no.
Several of these incidents were captured on camera. Was that evidence, yo?
Yeah, what the hell?
Where's the proof, yo?
We should email some of them.
In the bio, yo? Let's, bitch.
Let's email some of them, see if we can find anything.
Oh, yeah. We were absolutely terrified, Marianne told reporters. I don't know if I'll ever be the same again. If I hear a noise that I cannot explain or something goes missing, that it always makes us wonder whether it has come back again. But right now, we are glad it seems to have left us alone. Because as soon as it started, it stopped just as quickly.
Ah, perfect. How handy.
So handy.
Off it goes.
Off it goes.
Smack talking someone else.
That's it. And they were like, we're going to sell the house. We're not going to live there. So they did. They sold their house. And,
very smart.
That's pretty much it. That's the end of the story. As quickly as it started, all this evidence that they apparently got, it stopped. I can't find the evidence, but there's books, there's a movie. The couple don't want to be...
Interviewed or anything.
But yeah, what was one thing? The couple and the investigators continued to argue that it was more like a real-life nightmare than some special effects from a movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
And that's the South Shields poltergeist, guys, with a toy fetish.
Super creepy. I loved how it was smack-talking. That was very fun.
Very fun.
I would definitely have... If a ghost was writing, you know, bitch to me on a chalkboard, I'd probably be like, ugh.
It's a gangster fucking ghost out here.
Hell yeah.
But I don't think a lot of that was a three-year-old, you know?
Oh, definitely not.
Because I'm pretty sure there's people out there going, well, a three-year-old could throw a toy. Yes, it could throw a toy. Could unless... it play tug-of-war on the bed with two full-grown adults?
Unless the three-year-old was really like... Like that story where the little person posed as a child and then went into... Hey?
Orphan?
No, it's like an actual thing that happened in life. Like
oh.
A little person went and posed as like a, I think like an 8 or 9 year old or something like that. Maybe a young teenager. And then just lived in this couple's house. Anyways.
That's literally the plot for Orphan though.
Was it really?
Based off that?
The story that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
No, that's a real life thing that happened.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is the movie Orphan based off of that?
Probably not.
When did that happen?
Oh, there's been a few instances.
Wow. Have y'all seen Orphan? Oh, that's one of my favorite movies.
Take a look.
Oh, it's such a good movie.
I've never seen it.
The chick in it, like the character.
Super creepy.
I think she like ends up being like 40 or something.
Oh, jeez.
But she looks like a 10-year-old.
A kid, yeah.
And she's Russian.
Oh, maybe it is based on it, honestly.
Could be.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, interesting. Very creepy story, babe.
Thank you. Yeah, no. I saw an article and I saw it had a creepy clown doll and I was like,
that's
the one.
That's the one for me.
I don't think there was any clown dolls in it. But I'm pretty sure that...
the little rabbit with a box cutter was equally scary.
Yeah.
I think that might be all we have time for today. Thank That's you so much for listening. And thanks for sharing, babe.
Oh, thank you for sharing, babe.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year for the second week of...
January.
This year.
If you...
Hey, stop that.
If you want to find us online, you can at youmeanapoltergeist.com.
That's it.
Follow all our stuff over there and, hey, have some fun.
Yeah, have some fun this year. Fuck everyone else.
Bitch.
Stay safe, though. Wear a mask. Wash your hands. Socially distance. But also, just have fun.
And don't forget
to exercise regularly.
Bitch.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.